the first thing I need to do is just build trust with my peers and with my team. I need to come in and do nothing but listen and understand. And we managed to get an extra 1 million people out to go to the movies that day in Canada, learn a little bit about finance, learn a little bit about every area of an organization, so that when you go into a company and you start doing marketing, you see the bigger picture and can understand how your role fits in and how you can kind of lean on each other to just work towards a common vision or goal.
Welcome back to Business Night Out. We are thrilled to bring another episode to your ears today. I don't know if you noticed, there's so much sunshine these days. It's March now, which means winter is almost over. So whether you're sipping on your morning iced coffee or settling in with a cozy cup of tea, we are here to bring you inspiration. So today, we have a special guest for you. We are joined by our extraordinary guest, Susan LeBlanc, the Vice President of Marketing at Meridian Credit Union. Susan is not just a top player in her field, she's a person with unique journey and insights that are sure to ignite your curiosity. We're incredibly excited to learn from her experience and delve into her world of marketing. So let's get comfortable, open our minds, and embark on this fascinating journey together. Hi, Susan. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Carol. It's great to see you.
Susan, could you please start by telling us a little bit about your background in marketing and communications and what specifically led you to your current position?
Yeah, sure. So I have a very diverse background in marketing. I've worked for all different sizes of organizations, from startups through to, you know, larger Canadian companies in education and nonprofit and entertainment, and focused mostly on the Canadian market. I've only had one role that was international, and that was really by design because I just really like Canada and all across all different sort of fields of marketing as well. And with the intention of being a marketing generalist with the goal of eventually becoming, you know, like a vice president of marketing. So that's where I am today, the vice president of marketing with Meridian Credit Union. And I have to say that what really drew me to marketing in the first place was my passion for psychology. I remember at the age of 9, my family was going through a separation, and I, you know, it was difficult on the kids. And so my parents put us into family therapy. And I just remember walking into the room and seeing this doctor there and thinking like, oh my God, there is like a profession where all you do is figure people out and how they think. And that just blew my mind. And I knew from that age that that's what I wanted to do with my life. And unfortunately, it didn't really go that way for me because I ended up living on my own at a very young age and had to finish high school while I was still on my own. I didn't have the financial support of my parents. So I was living with my older sister, and we were in the welfare system, you know, just to help us pay for rent and everything. And I managed to graduate high school, but then I had to go into work right away. And so I actually started working in operations, helping companies design their internal processes and find efficiencies, and doing some account management in the printing industry and also in the high-tech industry. And this was sort of during the early 2000s, you know, high-tech bubble. So it was a really exciting time. But I knew that I didn't want to stay there. Like, a career in operations just wasn't what I was destined to go into, right? I still wanted to be a therapist. And so during that time, I decided to start taking classes in marketing at Algonquin College just in the evenings, because I could see a strong link between psychology and marketing. And so I got my marketing diploma and then went into psychology in night school after that through university. And that has really become a retirement plan for me to get into therapy. And I'm really excited about that. But for now, you know, I've been really enjoying my marketing career.
Yeah, it's very interesting because a lot of my friends, they have a commerce degree, but they also have a psychology minor, because marketing is basically studying people's mind, customer behavior, and you have to target their pain points. That's basically kind of psychology too. Besides that, I think our listeners will be very interested in hearing a little bit about what a typical day looks like for you in such a senior role?
I put a lot of emphasis on my team and my staff. I'm very much a servant leader. And so I see my role as being necessary to help others do their roles, right? And I'm here to sort of tear down the barriers, build relationships across the different departments within the credit union, and just to help pave the way so that when my team runs into barriers with accomplishing their goals, I can go and help, you know, work with the other departments to figure things out and figure out a path forward. And so that's a big part of it is just managing the staff, but not so much, you know, managing. It's really listening and understanding what it is that they need. The other side of that is helping to paint the vision of where the credit union wants to go so that the team can come up with the strategy and can figure out the most efficient way to actually execute on the strategy. And, you know, we can all sort of get there together. So I think that's kind of what servant leadership looks like. It's not sort of dictating what needs to be done across the team. It's working collaboratively with them, building a vision together, helping them to understand what the executive team wants and is looking for, and to bring that to life and to tear down barriers for them. So that's sort of how I would describe my job, really. There's also a lot of day-to-day marketing stuff that goes on, like approving strategies and assets and, you know, coming up with the right segmentation and targeting approaches and reviewing media plans, and all of that is sort of baked into it. But my role is really to help the team to do all of that work.
I can totally relate. I would say I'm like in such a leadership role, but I am a co-director in my school club. And me and my other co-director, all we do is asking around team members what skills they want to build on. And we are there to help them to do whatever they want and to help them grow. So I can relate, and I hope I can do that in the future sometimes in my career to help my team members grow in professional and personal ways. I do have one follow-up question. So what strategy do you use to build relationships within the team, and how do you make them cohesive?
Yeah, you know, so I've only been with Meridian, I'm going into my 12th week, so it hasn't even been 3 months yet. And I told my CMO, you know, from day one, because I could tell that he was really eager to get going on some innovative strategies and, you know, wanted me to hit the ground running. And I said, the first thing I need to do is just build trust with my peers and with my team. I need to come in and do nothing but listen and understand. And it was very fortunate that he was on side with that and thought that was a really good idea. So it afforded me, you know, at least the first month to go in and really just assess the lay of the land and get to know people. And the next step from there was to start to dig in a little bit deeper with everyone, because initially, it's just getting to know each other and building trust. And then the second step is understanding what their barriers are and what their pain points are. And also understanding what their strategies are, like what is it that they're trying to accomplish. So we got into some their vision of what the goals were. And then after that, it's building out a plan to help them to achieve those goals. But of course, also translating maybe things that are not quite aligned at the executive level, and ensuring that the team is adopting those strategies and those goals moving forward. And that requires a lot of sort of change management, right? Because you're coming in as a new leader and they're already on a path, and you're kind of interjecting in that and saying, okay, we might need to pivot in some cases. And so you need to really paint the vision for them, help them to grow the desire for the change towards that vision, and help them to understand what the first steps are to get there. And I think if you can do that, you can break down any resistance that they might have to change. And it's a lot easier to move forward. It just goes a lot faster from there, as opposed to coming in and saying, okay, you know, these are all the ways that we need to change. Let's go do it. And because that will just get people's walls up, right? And they won't trust you, and they'll feel a lot of resistance, and you're going to be sitting there wondering, like, why don't people want to do these amazing things? It doesn't matter that the things are amazing. What matters is that you're bringing them along the change path so that they're ready for it. And they're not just ready for it, but they're going to be your advocates who are going to rally behind you and help you to achieve.
Sounds great. You sound like a great leader. I feel like, obviously, getting to know people, know your team members, know employees, and then building this personal trust and connection is very important. And I'm glad you mentioned change management, because I'm actually reading a book, Change Management Handbook from Harvard, as course requirement, obviously. But it says a lot of leaders, they don't really know change management. They don't have a specific knowledge about change management, and they just let their employees do whatever that's necessary, but without actually knowing the bigger picture of it. So, which I think that's why, to me, you're such a good leader again. So thank you so much for sharing that. Now, let's move to some light questions. So first, could you tell us about your favorite marketing campaign, if you have one?
It's a hard question. I mean, I've been around for a little bit, you know? So there's quite a few things. Like, I remember doing influencer marketing before it was called influencer marketing. And that was, you know, looking back, that's really cool. Or helping high school students figure out what type of career they wanted in healthcare based on their personalities. So those are some really cool initiatives that I did early on in my career. I think the funnest one I've done was No Excuses Day with the Scene Plus Rewards Program. Now, we at the time, we were just called Scene. We hadn't expanded into Scene Plus yet. And it was 2019, the pre-pandemic. And we uncovered a unique consumer insight that people tend to cancel on their friends and family sort of last minute when it comes to just getting out and having fun, because it's easier to do that in the moment, right? When you just don't really feel like going out for whatever reason and you find yourself making excuses. And so we came up with the concept of No Excuses Day, which was a day that we registered it on like national websites, you know, where you might have National Women's Day or whatever, which got it a lot of attention, even in the media. So that was a really good strategy. And called it No Excuses Day, the one day to get out and have fun with your friends and your family. No excuses, just do it. And we're going to make it really easy for you by offering half price movies and, you know, deals with all of our restaurant partners. And so most of the campaign actually happened, the marketing happened before the day of course, where we were just promoting, get ready for No Excuses Day. And we wanted to offer this to everybody, not just Scene members. If you remember, Domino's did something like this, I think, where they were offering like free pizza, you know, to everyone. All you had to do was download their app. So we kind of leveraged a strategy like that and, you know, offered it to all comedians. It was wildly successful. We leveraged influencers. We had a media strategy. We were on, you know, programmatic digital ads. We used connected TV. So sort of every channel you can think of, obviously a one-to-one strategy as well, which was very effective. And we managed to get an extra 1 million people out to go to the movies that day in Canada. And that was enormous. And because we had registered it as a national day, Ellen DeGeneres had picked that up, but she made a joke about it on her show. So it even, you know, reached into the United States. And that campaign won 21 different awards, different marketing awards. My favorite one being the best marketing campaign of the year in the world. So it was an international by Strategy Magazine. So yeah, that was definitely something to put on the resume. But I just felt really good because the campaign was all about building connections and, you know, not taking people for granted. And we were really well set up to just launch it year after year after year. But of course, the pandemic hit the following year and everybody had a lot of excuses for not leaving the house and getting together with friends and family. So yeah, we didn't continue it on, but I think it would have been wildly successful had the pandemic not happened.
That is incredible. Like, the additional 1 million people is such an achievement. The next question would be, what is the most unusual marketing strategy you've ever come across?
I don't know if I have an answer to that, to be honest. Actually, maybe I do. This still sticks with me. And it's a small example, but I was riding on the Toronto subway to work one day, and I saw a poster ad, and it was a guy in scuba diving gear in the water in a shark tank. And there was like a big great white shark with its mouth open right beside him on the other side of the, you know, obviously on the other side of the cage. And there was a tagline that said, "What does your freedom look like?" And it was I don't even remember if it was like an insurance company or a bank or, you know, investments or something, but it was something financial related. And all I could think was, that is not what my freedom looks like. It's where you're trapped in a space with limited oxygen with a shark, like right next to you. And I thought, why on earth would they do that? You know, and think that that was a good representation of freedom. Maybe it was for retirement or something. Like, what are you going to do when you retire? But like most people in the world don't want to do that activity for fun. And it certainly wouldn't be a picture of freedom. So I thought it was hilarious and very, very unusual.
I feel like a lot of financial services, they do such a good job on advertising. When I'm on Netflix and there's always Scotiabank advertisement saying that, oh, if you're doing yoga, and then all of a sudden the instructor was like, oh, breathe, and then think of something out of your wallet. And then, oh, can you vision this out of budget vision? And I was like, okay, that's not what I want to hear when I'm doing yoga. And then at the end of the advertisement, it's like, oh, we're here to help you. You're richer than you think. I'm like, okay, thank you for that comfort. But yeah, I think that's so interesting because financial services themselves, a little bit boring, to be honest. So they have to use a very unusual way to attract people. That's very interesting. The next question is, can you describe an area where you'd like to instantly become an expert?
Like if I could just have knowledge dropped into my brain, it would be all around data analysis and model building. I wish I could just know how to do all of that. I remember the statistics classes in university were certainly my least favorite. I do not have a superpower in math. I like algebra, but I think it's because it uses letters. That's probably why. And yeah, I would just love to be able to think more technically and really admire people who can. And it's not that I can't. Certainly, you know, I have some abilities. I understand the capabilities and the possibilities when it comes to data and anything technical as well. But the thought of doing it, my brain just doesn't operate in that way.
I can totally relate. Statistics are like my least favorite area, for real. But I just realized in real life, even in marketing, you need a lot of technical skills like modeling or data visualization. It's very necessary in marketing. But I did not know that before I chose marketing. I thought marketing was just brainstorming. Let's talk about stories. Let's study behaviors. It's psychology. But at the end of the day, you have to have some data skills anyway, which I don't enjoy them at all. But I will try to study them. My next question is your choice of superpower.
Okay, gonna go a little, maybe this is a little unusual, but I would say adaptability. I think, you know, the human species has been able to get as far as we have because we are adaptable. And yet, from day to day, I think it's very easy to get sort of stuck in your ways and in your thought patterns. And this is why people are resistant to change because, you know, the unknown is scary. Even if it looks or sounds appealing, you might still be afraid of it compared to what you're currently living, which, you know, it might not be perfect, but it's comfortable, right? And so to evolve, we need to break out of that comfort zone. And that's where you find growth. And so I've always considered myself to be an incredibly adaptable person. And I really like that. But I think it's still a muscle I'm constantly trying to grow, you know, and think that we could all benefit from doing that.
This is definitely the deepest answer I got for this question. Everyone was like, I want to be invisible. I want to be not skin of spiciness. And adaptability is definitely a good one. I mean, personally, I hate getting out of my comfort zone. So a little information about me. I am a street dancer. And every time I go to a bit advanced classes, I got so intimidated by all the people around me because they're so talented. And I kept telling myself, okay, maybe I should, you know, back off. Maybe I should attend some easier classes because that was really scary. But I ended up pushing myself. And I don't know if I actually progressed or not, but mentally I've progressed because I'm not scared anymore. I'd be like, okay, I'm the worst. Who cares? I don't care. And my last poll question for you is, what is one marketing rule that you would change if you're given the chance?
You know, I actually don't know that there are any marketing rules. I think that's the whole idea. It's a very creative field. And the whole, like, the job to be done is to do things that others haven't done before, because that's what's going to grab people's attention. But if I had my way, I would like to actually have a rule that all marketing has to be done ethically and with inclusivity in mind. I think that I would love to see minority segments not just be represented, but also included, right? In the process of developing the marketing and the products themselves. And that goes for all types of, you know, maybe minority isn't the right word, but, you know, body positivity and race and gender and sexual orientation and, you know, invisible disabilities. Like, let's just bring it all to the forefront and normalize it so that that starts to feel like the mainstream, as opposed to, you know, what a lot of marketers do, unfortunately, is just sort of, it's like putting, this isn't a fun expression, but it's like putting lipstick on a pig, where, you know, it's still a pig, but they focus on representation and like, oh yeah, let's add that one minority to the advertising. But that just doesn't do it. You know, like, we just need to be really authentic in the way that we actually run our marketing.
That is so true. I mean, I am definitely part of a minority. And I realized, because when I'm doing job hunting, a lot of my friends, if they finally got into marketing, they're basically either men or, I don't know if I should say that, either men or white girls, if you know what I mean. Because I feel like it's just typical. It's just, they represent marketing for real. And I feel like a lot of companies, when they have the EDI annual report, they put numbers, they put stats. But are they actually included? Like, are there underrepresented groups actually involved in the decision-making process? We don't even know. They're just like numbers. So thank you so much for bringing that up. It's making my podcast on another level for real.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to add that Meridian Credit Union has, they follow the policy of nothing about us without us. And coming in as a leader into the organization, I have not been with a company who has done it so properly in the past, and it feels amazing. And we're very careful about not just how we plan things with it, you know, people at the table and included, but also making sure that the agencies and vendors that we work with have, you know, DEI policies, and that we're working with production crews that are diverse and from diverse communities, and, you know, helping to give opportunities and grow careers where some other companies just aren't giving them the chance. So it's something that's really important to me, and feels really good to work with a company that's aligned to that.
Let's go deeper into your role. So we're interested in hearing about the common marketing challenges faced by credit unions, and how do creative marketing strategies overcome them?
I would say, so again, I've only been there for a couple of months now, but it's very clear to me that the smaller budgets of credit unions are a big challenge compared to what the big banks have. And, you know, we're looking at maybe 1/10 of the budgets if we're lucky. And so you have to be really, really creative and hyper-targeted, and mostly you need to be really focused, because you can't be everything to everyone. So a credit union needs to pick a lane and just go all in on it. I would also say that just being called a credit union. A lot of people don't really know what that is compared to a bank. But the truth is credit unions are banks. That's what we are. We're just called by a different name. And the reason we're called by a different name is actually a really positive thing. It's because we're owned by our customers. We call them members. And when you join the credit union, you have to buy a share. For Meridian, it only costs a dollar, but you actually are buying the stake in the company. And so you get to vote, you know, in the annual general, at the annual general meeting for the board of directors. Like, you actually get to be involved and have a say. And we also don't take our profits and give it to shareholders. Some credit unions do dividends and pay dividends at the end of the year to all of their members. I really like the way Meridian does it, though, where we take all of our profits and we invest them back into communities to do good. And so we have a really strong ESG strategy where, you know, we're very intentionally trying to lift up communities. We're focused on equity deserving groups and helping them to just have more of a fighting chance, you know, in the market. It might be investing in businesses that are focused on, in, you know, being environmentally conscious, or other like Habitat for Humanity. We've done some work with them. Anyways, it's just such a nice feeling to know that you can be doing good in the world just by choosing who you bank with, right? And so I think there are some very unique differences for credit unions compared to the big banks. And in some ways they're really positive. But we don't have the budgets to tell people that. So thanks for listening.
I did not know what credit union is before I saw Meridian on College Street, and I was curious and I searched it up, and then I knew, okay, it is also a financial service company. But because a lot of people don't know about it, I'm just curious, how do you communicate this unique structure of credit union to the general audience? Like, do you have advertisements, or do you have other ways to tell them, educate them what it is?
Definitely advertising. And to be honest, we're changing our strategy a little bit at Meridian, where we're going to be focusing on more brand marketing, because we want to build awareness around that, and long-term awareness, not just to get people to convert in the moment, but we actually want to be known and increase our unaided awareness. So we will be doing more brand marketing moving forward, which requires an investment that a lot of the smaller credit unions just can't do. We are the largest in Ontario and second largest in Canada. So that affords us, you know, some liberties like that. But I also think there's opportunities with, you know, we're starting to get into podcasting. We have a really amazing president in JN. She is great with the media, and even just having her sort of share her interviews and her knowledge and experience on her LinkedIn channel gets us a lot of reach. So there are some more guerrilla style tactics that we can take, like leveraging, you know, our ELT team to spread awareness that we're tapping into more and more over time.
I'm glad you mentioned credit unions. At least Meridian is trying to change marketing strategy a little bit to increase their awareness. I also see a lot of transformation of marketing, like, over the years. And how have digital marketing or data analysis changed the marketing landscape over the years in your experience?
Yeah, it's funny because earlier you were talking about the fact that marketing actually is really technical. It didn't used to be. You always had to know how to do really good marketing math, and, you know, statistical analysis and stuff was always important. But if you've ever seen the show Mad Men, which I think all marketers have or should, it really was like that. Not with me, like, I came in, I'm not that old, but it really was like that, where it was more about just psychology and how do we change people's minds and change behaviors. And so the rise of digital marketing has completely changed the landscape. It has opened up job opportunities, I would say, in a lot of really technical roles. At first, it was it was companies were like, okay, well, we got to do this digital marketing thing. It's becoming really popular. And it sort of became like the cheap, dirty cousin of traditional marketing. It was like, let's do some digital marketing because it's super cheap and we can reach a lot of people. And there was a period of probably a decade where after a while, those digital marketers within the organizations were really fighting for, you know, bigger budgets and just almost like improved working conditions, because the pressures on the teams were pretty enormous with the expectations of what digital marketing could do for really low budgets. And I think where we're at now is it's considered a lot less like that, and digital marketing is just marketing, but also marketing teams are kind of focused more on, you know, leveraging data to drive targeted strategies and segmented one-to-one personalization that's timely and relevant. I think the expectations of marketing today are sometimes a little bit unrealistic in that way, because it's actually not super easy to do those things. You have to do them properly. And if you're going into an organization that's been around for a while, the chances are they might have some antiquated systems that can't quite do that for you. And it can actually be really frustrating to, you know, to face that, to go into an organization and say, okay, great. I just, you know, I built out this amazing strategy to target all these people one-to-one, and it's all really personalized. And we're going to send communications at the channel that they prefer. And then your data team comes back and it's like, we don't really have that data. We don't know what they prefer. We still need to set it up. And it's kind of remarkable to think that that's where a lot of organizations are still to this day. There's newer sort of startups that are more nimble and are starting from that viewpoint that can probably do it a lot better. But larger organizations are still trailing behind a little bit. And that's where we're at today. And then, you know, you take a look at AI and how that's starting to come into the picture. And, you know, the executive team is like, yeah, we want to get there. We're hearing that it's going to help us with efficiencies and drive costs down and do more with less. And of course, every business loves to hear that. But the teams are then like, well, we're still building up the foundation, or we're still replacing our older systems because the technology moves so fast. And these things are really big and expensive. So I think right now, organizations have some challenges that they're facing, and they're all trying to tackle those challenges in different ways. But ultimately, where we're getting to is a really exciting space, you know, where we're moving towards AI and we'll only use data, you know, in more intelligent ways.
It's very interesting you mentioned AI. We noticed AI has been implemented in almost every industry, in the system, in the companies, in the way they work, the way employees interact with each other. But how, I know you mentioned a little bit, but specifically, how would you vision AI in the future would help in the marketing industry? Would it actually replace a lot of workers, especially in the creative agency? Because right now we know a lot of AI, they can literally do illustration, they can give brainstorm ideas. So how would you vision the impact on the industry?
I think it's going to be quite a profound impact. I do. But where it's going to impact, at least the first step of it, will be at the execution level. So taking some of the dependency off of manual deployment and execution, and even decision making, right? Because AI should be able to determine, okay, this person should get that creative and that person should get this marketing at this time on this channel. It should help us to figure those things out. In the creative space, generative AI is, I think it's amazing, but I also think that it's going to come in again more at the production level initially. If you're a startup who wants to, you know, start producing creative, then yeah, you can go into Canva or one of the, you know, AI image generation tools and kind of throw something together and get it out into the world. But if you're a complex organization, that might not really cut it. And you're still going to need the creative strategy that focuses on identifying the unique consumer insight that applies to your situation and builds out a creative strategy around it that, again, moves the needle. Because in marketing, you always need to be coming up with something fresh and new. Generative AI is using old data that already exists to come up with stuff. And it's not quite at the stage yet where it's coming up with brand new, amazing ideas. It's kind of saying, okay, here's what works for other people. You should try it too. So I think organizations will adopt generative AI to, from a production perspective, like here's the creative for the campaign. It's going to resize and reformat everything across all the channels for you. And that's going to save you many hours of work. Your creative team will actually be freed up to focus on developing that really cool creative strategy that they want to be focusing on in the first place. The other thing I would say is I'm going to assume that there will be a trend towards, just from consumers towards businesses, towards authenticity, you know, and there's probably going to be ways to identify like, hey, was this an AI generated image? I think that the art community is probably going to get really loud about this at some point. This is just my prediction. Like, who really knows? But it's going to prompt consumers to be like, I don't want to be swayed by things that are fake. You know, I want things that are real. And companies are going to have to listen to that and they'll have to lean into authentic storytelling and using real people, you know, and real voiceover talent and all of those things if they want to sort of have the respect of consumers. So I think there's always a pendulum swing, right? And right now we're moving towards the, hey, everything you need can be created for you. It's going to swing back to everything needs to be authentic, and then it'll land somewhere in the middle.
I have to say, I think your prediction is going to be very accurate because I've seen voices online. And when people post their illustrations, there will be people criticizing, it looks like an AI generated it. It's not really you drawing it. So I feel like in the future, people obviously will care if my strategy, if my idea is created by AI or it's actually created by the people from your company. And it's very interesting, but we'll see. Next question is, I know you mentioned a little bit about your experience at Scene Plus, but could you share your experience of the launching of the new Scene Plus brand? And you mentioned you hate data, but you did use data-driven performance to achieve your goals. And I'm wondering, how did you do that?
Oh boy. So I think what the public doesn't see is how long these initiatives really take. It all started with forming a relationship with Empire, who is the owner of Sobeys and other popular chains. And of course, just the negotiations, you know, the part that I saw took a year, but I'm sure it took much longer than that before we got to signing a contract and saying, yes, we're going to do this. And the Scene program is going to be owned by, you know, Cineplex, Scotiabank and Sobeys collectively. So we went from having sort of two owners to having three, and the complexities they weren't insignificant. I think from there, it was, okay, we're doing this. What's it going to look like? How are we going to do it? You know, from all perspectives, from a branding perspective, we fielded a lot of research to determine, do we need to change the name and start completely new? It turned out that the Scene program is beloved by Canadians, and it made sense to maintain that strong branding and just add the plus to the end of the name. And then, of course, it's bringing it to life in terms of how it looks and feels and what is the new personality of the brand? Is it shifting? All of those things. So that was the branding side of things, which led to some really fun advertising, you know, across all the traditional and digital channels. From a data perspective, because we were working across large organizations, again, you can imagine some of the technology that is used is... it's not old, but it's because, you know, maybe it's like 10 years old, but 10 years in the technology world is a long time. And sending up these systems across massive organizations is incredibly expensive. And so we kind of tore down the systems across, you know, Scotiabank and Scene, and a little bit with Cineplex, and certainly with Empire as well, and figured out how do we rebuild the data flows, right? Because the data for the member, and loyalty programs are all about data, but the data for the member is housed and owned by Scene. And then there's pieces of it that, you know, if you were transacting at one of our owners, that data flows back to them so that they can kind of use it in their marketing. But there's a lot of data that they don't get, right? We had to build data privacy roles and contracts across all three of them to say, who's going to get what? And what are we, you know, what are we telling the member? What's the story to the, right? So for them to want to approve of that. So yeah, the legalities behind it, just building the contracts, just figuring out the data that needed to be sort of rebuilt, rebuilding all the APIs. We built a new data lake and all of the front end visualization platforms that are required to see the data in a way that makes sense. And then of course, the MarTech side of things. So we were already leveraging Salesforce Marketing Cloud, but we had to rebuild it all, right, from the ground up. So we took all of our marketing journeys, you know, tore them down, figured out what we wanted to be saying to people, rebuilt them, and across all of our one-to-one channels, and just had to redo the whole thing. It was an amazing learning experience. And I actually went through something similar at Heart and Stroke when we redid their branding, and they amalgamated from 13 provincial entities and territory entities down into one national organization. There was like something like 60 databases that we had to, you know, amalgamate into one. And they adopted Salesforce Marketing Cloud as well. It was a really cool experience just to, there's going to be unique challenges in those situations, right? That even if you're someone, a transformation expert who goes in and is like, all right, we're going to do this, there's going to be new stuff that comes up that you've never seen before. And so what you get is a lot of people who are just rolling up their sleeves and trying to figure things out together. And it's a really cool experience that you can't walk away from that without having some growth, right? So yeah, I really enjoyed that. The team at Scene and across our owners were phenomenal to work with. And it was a very rewarding experience.
That sounds very challenging. It's a lot of work, but I'm sure it's definitely a valuable, rewarding learning experience. And speaking of learning, do you have any recommendations on any resources or strategies that upcoming marketers could use to keep up with the ever-changing marketing trends?
I do. I don't know that mine will be novel from what others would recommend. I think that early in a career, people tend to be just acquiring hard skills, technical skills, right? Learning about all the tools available to use in marketing. And I think that's really important. I would also emphasize that the soft skills are important as well. So I would say go and learn about just organizational operations. How do companies operate across different departments? Learn a little bit about finance, learn a little bit about, you know, legal, every area of an organization, so that when you go into a company and you start doing marketing, you see the bigger picture and can understand how your role fits in and how you can kind of lean on each other to just work towards a common vision or goal. Because what people tend to do early in their career is they come up with some really cool ideas, you know, in marketing, but they don't understand how it fits into the broader context of an organization. And so if you can have a focus on learning about that, then you're going to be a step ahead of other marketers. The way to do that, I would say, I'm going to use the word networking, but I would encourage people to have a slightly different view of it than traditional. It's not just about pinging people on LinkedIn and asking them questions. Networking is actually just about finding friendships. If you look at it like that, you know, you're finding friendships with people that have a bit of a common interest to you, and you're getting together and you're having an engaging conversation about it. Doesn't matter if they know more about it than you do or vice versa. It really is just about building relationships and having professional friends. And hopefully positioning it that way makes it a little less scary, because I know a lot of people really hate the idea of networking. I hate it too. If it's really about like, hey, I want to talk to you because I have questions, because there's things I don't know, but you know them. Yeah, that's scary. But if you're looking at it like, hey, we have a common interest and I'm wondering if we could just kind of talk about it and see if we fit together, and then maybe we have a relationship, a professional relationship that carries on from there. You know, it's a slightly different view that could be helpful.
That mindset is very different. I never thought of that way, because I hated networking before. I felt like it's fake, it's intentional. You approach that professional because you want something from them or you want to ask something from them. But I kind of forced myself to do it. And Suzanne and I actually met in a networking event, and I would put myself out there. I was asking questions, but deep down I was like, oh, it's kind of exhausting, to be honest. And I want to know more about you, about the marketing, about everyone. But in that setting, it was just very exhausting, a little bit overwhelming, especially a lot of people were there too. And I just reached out to Susan. I was like, hey, I have a podcast. I really want to know more about you, about the company, about the industry. Would you be my guest? And thank God, Susan said yes. And thank you so much for doing this again. As we wrap up, could you tell us about your future plans? So where do you see yourself in 5 years?
In 5 years, I hope to still be the vice president of marketing at Meridian Credit Union. I think that's, you know, because again, I'm very new there and I have so much growth that I can still do. But ultimately, as I mentioned early on in this podcast, my goal is to move into therapy. And so I've been training for it my whole life. I am currently becoming certified as a professional coach. And, you know, I'm working with some pro bono clients to build out my coaching program. And I think it's going really, really well. I'm very excited to start, you know, offering it for just to, as a revenue source for myself. But ultimately, what I'm doing with that is trying to get clients who want to do good in the world and maybe don't really know how to do that because it just feels so big and lofty. And the things that one individual can do never feel impactful enough. And what I found is a lot of people think about doing good just from a career perspective, like, oh, maybe I should go and work for a charity. I worked for charities. They're really wonderful. It still didn't feel big enough, you know, felt really good, but never quite big enough. And so I want to sort of work with people and help them identify, you know, who are you? What are your values in life? And how can you live them every single day so that in your day-to-day life, you feel like you're always working towards your mission in your personal life and in your professional life. And once we kind of identify that and figure out, you know, the personal side of things, we do hone in on the professional life and figure out, you know, how can I sort of expand my reach, expand my network, just figure out what my sort of mission team needs to look like. You know, maybe I can accomplish everything by working in a charity, or maybe I need to move outside of that and just do some other things and network with some other people that, you know, want to just take on projects and step together and whatnot. So I have to believe that it's possible to make money by doing good in the world. And that, you know, if I can help others to do that, I'm living my life mission. And so that's the goal. And then ultimately as well, you know, once I get certified as a coach, I'll be getting certified as a therapist also, so that I can just really look at the whole person and help the whole person. So that's my retirement plan. It's probably 10 years out, not five, but it is starting. It started last year. And so I'm almost ready to start taking on paying clients, which is really exciting.
That sounds so wholesome. I feel like my pain is already cured by that. It's actually warms my heart, because I feel like a lot of people, when they say they want to do good stuff, they only do it because of being very political. They want to do it because, okay, I think I should do it, not because I really want to do it. So thanks you so much for actually wanting to do something good. That is so heartwarming. And finally, could you share any advice for students who are just starting out their career in marketing?
I would say if you're just starting out, you probably have a lot of pressure with deciding what stream you want to go down, especially now that we're not in the Mad Men days anymore and marketing has multiple streams that you can go into. It's okay if you want to be a generalist. It's okay if you want to be specific. All of those things are okay. But I would say when you're just starting out to approach everything with open curiosity, because you can pivot later in your career. And, you know, I did it with every job that I changed and still got hired for, you know, like a branding expert position when I only had CRM experience, for example. I think if you are just open and curious and sort of treat everything in life like it's an experiment, it's a moment in time. You're going in it to just absorb and learn everything that you can. There's always going to be transferable skills that you can use in the next role that you get. And so don't feel like you have to be super conclusive and make up your mind early on. It's okay to just be open and see where you know, your interests take you.
Okay, thank you so much, Susan, for taking the time to share your insights and experiences with us. And we look forward to seeing you in future achievements in the world of marketing. And thank you to all the listeners. And until next time, stay informed and keep striving for success.
Thank you so much for having me.